Hey, we want to tell you about a ministry that's really close to our hearts. Global Christian Relief. Around the world, our brothers and sisters are risking everything for Jesus, and often they're unseen and unheard. GCR exists to remind us that we're one church, one family, and that no believer should stand alone. They come alongside persecuted Christians with prayer, Bibles, and this is the thing, real help. Food, shelter, trauma care, so the church can endure and shine as a light for the gospel. When you give, you're not supporting a cause, you're standing with family. God is not too small as to handle your honest prayers. And so confession isn't always, here's the bad things I've done. Confession is just telling God the truth. Brooke Ledbetter has been at the church for quite a long time, and we've just got to watch Jesus do some pretty significant and beautiful things in her life. We're going to talk about some of those things. We're going to talk about some anxiety stuff and God delivering her in a significant way from those things, and then becoming an author and a writer. And like I said, it just for me, and you hear me say this all the time, but to be at the Village now for almost 23 years, to be embedded with this group of people, to watch the slow burn of sanctification, and then to be able to kind of lay that up for you guys to kind of look at and marvel and see yourself in and grow in confidence of, is really the reason why we do this, is to kind of fuel your own sanctification, your own pursuit of Jesus through the highs and lows of following after him. And so, Brooke,
hey,
what's up?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
No, man, I was pumped. I was pumped. Yeah. So I would love for you to, you know, this is always that weird moment, like I know so much and,
sure.
And nobody watching does.
Right.
And so catch us up a little bit. Raised in a Christian home, kind of relationship with Jesus. Just give us kind of a bit of a background before we dive into kind of the swing down, anxiety and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, all the fun stuff later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I grew up in a Christian home, was, you know, in church every Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday night, you know, Baptist business meeting.
Back in the day, Sunday, church, Wednesday, Sunday night. Yeah,
church potluck, all that kind of stuff. So, grew up just in a home that loved the Lord. I got saved when I was, gosh, like 4 or 5. Have just the vaguest memory of like being in my brother's room and praying with my mom, but the Lord just captured me early, and it's just been a continual slow burn of sanctification. Yeah. I like that. That is very accurate. But just grew up loving him and went to Dallas Baptist Christian University and just continued to grow in my relationship with him. And that's really it. There's no, it's not super exciting, but I'm thankful. So.
No, it's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Beautiful story. So when did you first start noticing kind of the anxiety, fear? When did those things start kind of flaring up in your heart?
Yeah. So for me, anxiety really came to play later. Depression was, the first friend that visited. And I noticed that, I grew up with a family member who really struggled with it. And so I was familiar, but just was like, that's not me. I don't struggle with that. And then I went through a really hard breakup my senior year of college, and I could not recover. And so that was really when I first started noticing it. And it was just one of those things where I was like, I mean, it's normal to be sad and grieve this. Like, I thought I was going to marry this guy and didn't, you know, but it was like, it just wouldn't go away. And then even after I got over him, that depression really stayed and lingered. So I was in my early 20s when I really was like, oh, this is bigger than just I'm sad and grieving a breakup.
Yeah.
So that was really when I started noticing it. And then anxiety kind of came to play a little later. I graduated, was in my first job, and I just noticed all of a sudden I was very nervous to be like around people. Social anxiety had really started flaring up. I felt like I was like overthinking every single thing I said all the time. And I just knew that wasn't normal of me historically. And so that was kind of the second wave of it.
How was like, So you got this terrible breakup. Mm-hmm. You rightly mourn that. And then it lingered. How was that mm-hmm. manifesting itself?
a lot of self, like negative self-talk, primarily, and just feeling like excessively lonely and like I was not worth a lot. Worthlessness. That is how it was mm-hmm. manifesting, was a lot of people don't really want to be around me. I don't want to be around me. And then when it was really bad in seasons, it would be, it's hard for me to get out of bed. It's hard, like little things would just take me out for the whole day. And it just felt like the level of suffering I'm experiencing doesn't match what's actually going on in life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you're mid 20s when the anxiety is still there.
Yeah.
And is it still like, is it a mixture of anxiety and depression? Is it?
I think it was definitely a mixture. It was always more the depression than the anxiety. The anxiety came into play again with like social situations. And I'm an extrovert, so I was super confused with my life where I was like, I wanted to be around people, but I also was just anxious and couldn't really function well in those environments. I mean, I remember Googling, can an extrovert have social anxiety? Yes, they can. So,
okay. It's good to know.
But I think the anxiety really flared up a lot as my depression reached kind of a peak of like suicidal ideation, things like that. And I was also in a job that I loved, like loved, but I had wrapped my whole identity into it. And I think that was where I was putting all of my energy. And so as that became more of my identity, of course, anything that happened there would throw me off. Yeah. And so my anxiety got worse around that too, because I was looking to this thing that was a good thing at first to really give me that value, give me that worth, and tell me who I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it can't do that.
And so are you looping Christian friends into all this?
Yeah.
Are you are you trying to find a psychiatrist or a therapist?
Yeah.
Are you going to the Lord with this? I'd love to hear about maybe your relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
As you're kind of riding these waves.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. So I, yes to all of those. How I really clung to him and fought in the beginning was just going to the Word and trying to find what was true and really like repeat that over myself. When I didn't have the energy even to do that, I would just play worship music over myself all the time. So my Spotify Wrapped for like 3 years in a row was all like Hillsong worship because I just needed it. And so those were big things. But I was looping in friends, especially, you know, after I was out of college and realized like, oh, this isn't just about this breakup. I started looping in my like couple close friends and just letting them know I was struggling. My home group at the time would pray over me at like every encounter. and so, yeah, I was letting people in. And when it was at its like worst, there were days where I would reach out to friends and just say like, hey, can you text me tomorrow and make sure that I get out of bed? Because I wasn't worried I was going to do anything, but I just couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah.
And so even just having someone that I knew was going to text me in the morning, be like, hey, you up? Like, was the help I needed. So it really came to a place of being okay asking for help and letting other people in so they could pray with and for me.
So I'm guessing you're living alone during all this?
Okay. No, that's an excellent question.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was living with my parents briefly.
Okay.
And they're great and wonderful, but it was just a level of vulnerability I didn't go there with them. But with my friends, I had them reach out. So.
Yeah.
Were they able to pick up on something's not right with our daughter?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And they were super concerned, rightfully so. I had just had a easier time being vulnerable with like peers and friends. And
that makes sense.
I think that's also probably pretty typical at that age too,
I think there was a level of shame that I was fighting too. And like at that point I was 28, 29. So having to move back into my parents' house at that age. And that was right as I was about to like leave that job for a time. And so there was a lot of shame of like having to move back in, I'm moving backwards. And so it was, my mom would have loved for me to have confided in her.
But I can imagine.
You can imagine.
But I just, wasn't comfortable enough yet to do so.
Yeah.
So, and the last thing I'll say too is I did have, I knew that I needed to seek out counseling and I couldn't afford it. And so I had a friend reach out to the church and it wound up being Summer. I hadn't not met her at that point. And just say like, hey, my friend is really struggling, needs some help affording counseling. Can we do anything? And the church graciously provided three sessions for me with the woman who became my regular counselor. She's fantastic, just anointed at what she does. And that was really the start of the turnaround. So. Okay.
So good.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that turnaround.
Yeah.
Talk to us about, so you start going to see this counselor and now you've got a guide and how does it kind of start pulling you out? Like, are you just able to spot it? What tools is she giving you to kind of combat?
Yeah. At first, I think it was just having a place even to just say everything without the pressure of needing my friends to carry that burden for me. Mm-hmm. There is something that's, you can unburden yourself with a counselor with a little less responsibility feeling of, well, now I'm trauma dumping on them and they're going to carry it because they love me. Whereas a counselor, your trust is trained to do that and is a place where they know what to do with, you know, everything you're giving them. So it was a safe place to just be as chaotically messy as I needed to be at the time. And then she's a believer. She's actually a member and just really wonderful at helping me figure out tools like replacing the like lies I kept telling myself with truths in scripture, teaching me how to pay attention and embody like the emotions that I needed to let go of instead of just trying to shove them down or like push them off. So she gave me a lot of tools like that. And she very patiently waited for me to ask about eventually getting on medication, which I have been on for seasons and it's been super helpful. She didn't immediately rush me to that conclusion, but when I asked, she was like, I was waiting for you to get there on your own.
I think
it would be helpful. For me, it was incredibly helpful. She's just, I could rave about her forever, but she is uniquely gifted at the role God has placed her in. And, in a way that's truly when you meet people who are doing exactly what the Lord has designed. And so I can't even articulate all the ways that she's helped, but she's wonderful and was really pivotal in me helping me realize A, that I needed that help, and B, helping me get to a place where I could let go of ultimately the job, which was kind of the catalyst of when the Lord lifted me out of that season. So,
Okay.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, you didn't want to trauma dump on your friends.
Yes.
And so the counselor was a great place for that.
Yeah.
But I imagine since the topic of your book is closer than a brother, that you did branch out at some point to your friends. What did that support look like?
Yeah.
What did it require of you to find the support or to ask for it?
Yeah. I think it just looked different. So having my friend reach out to the church, like just asking her, like, I feel really awkward doing that, but I need someone to do it for me, and just asking her to do that. Asking friends to text me in the morning. I had another friend who let me just like lay on her couch one day and just like weep on her couch. And so really it was just letting myself be messy in front of people. I think we'll get into this, but there is this sense of, I don't want to burden other people. And you feel like such a burden when you're in those spaces. And I've been in them. I've been on the other side of them with friends of mine who have struggled. And man, if I could just encourage anyone who is in that space, it's a joy when you are friends with someone, when you love someone, to help them carry that burden.
Yes.
And it's really hard to see that in the moment. But I just had to get to a place where, for me, it was like, I have no choice. I need to let people in or I'm not going to make it.
Yeah. And it's so healing to in a safe place with people that you've built trust with, to be so vulnerable and them not be able, not say, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Instead, they're like, lay on my couch and like be snotty and how, how that heals a lot of places. So it's not just the counseling, which is so good, or just the medicine, but also just that community that helped heal truly, you, that God truly. Needs to heal you.
Yeah.
Truly. I mean, when I talk about, I mean, my home group praying over me every month, my friends praying over me all the time. There was a host of people that the Lord brought into my life that I'm so thankful for and recognize like how much they did for me in that season. Even things I don't know, like the prayers when I'm not in the room that they prayed, things like that. So.
One of the things I've wrestled with for years is that my life, by the grace of God, is played out in the suburbs of Dallas, a place I am safe. I have an abundance of food and shelter and opportunity. And that's always because of what I've been able to see around the world. Man, I've wrestled with it internally. Like here I have this life of ease, and I just know that my brothers and sisters around the world, they are living a whole different reality than me. And that's why I've been super grateful to partner with GCR. Like some of the hardest realities in the world right now are happening to our brothers and sisters in Christ in Nigeria. It's become the center of modern Christian martyrdom. There's more believers being killed there for their faith than anywhere else in the world right now. Since 2009, over 50,000 Christians have lost their lives and more than 2 million have been displaced by extremist violence. And here's what I know. These aren't just stats. These are my brothers and sisters in Christ. This is our family. Many have had to flee their homes with nothing, and they arrive in these camps. And then once they get into the camps, there's all sorts of trauma, extreme poverty, and uncertainty. But in the middle of that suffering, I know the global church, you and me, we have an opportunity to step in and be the church. Through this work, these families, not just individuals, but families, they can receive immediate care. They can get food, clean water, shelter, and medical support. And over time, that can grow into education, job training, and sustainable income so they can rebuild their lives. And here's what I love about GCR. Like, it's tangible. This stuff is tangible. For $42 a month, you can support a whole displaced family. 76 can provide clean drinking water for up to 12 believers for an entire year. And 158 can equip a woman to start a business and provide for her family. When you give to Global Christian Relief, you're not just supporting a cause, you're actually standing with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And so I don't know about you, but I want to be the kind of person who doesn't just hear about atrocities and heartbreak, but as best I can with the resources God's made available to me, I want to be able to respond. Let me encourage you to look at, consider, and give to Global Christian Relief for the good of our brothers and sisters globally. I think I've learned this in 2009 when I got sick, but at least it started forming in my head at that time. I started experiencing it, that I think one of the primary ways we experience the love of God tangibly is through the saints.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's why confession's so important. And I think that's why intimate connection with other believers as friends is so important.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, you know, right?
Yeah.
But absolutely. That was, like, I just remember in 2009, you know, you got 2 years to live, 2 to 3 years to live. And I'm spiraling, and I theologically know the Lord loves me. I believe it in my heart. And the way I was experiencing his love in that season was like Matt Carter and Darren Patrick hopping on a plane and flying just to come see me and hug me. Yeah. And like our, you know, my guys coming over and just being with me, driving me down to Radiation. It was just like, that was like the tangible presence and love of God made manifest in the saints.
Which
makes me lament in some ways the disconnectedness of so many believers and that really foolish, I might even use the word demonic, idea that you can just love Jesus by yourself and don't need the church. You don't need other strong believers that are committed to a place and a people with you.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit about how the struggle and in some ways the deliverance kind of becomes the message here in Closer Than a Brother.
The richest seasons of my faith have been through his people. And when I think about the seasons of my life, they're all marked by the friendships and the kingdom of God and the people of God that he placed around me at the time. And so for me, that moment of deliverance of the Lord literally lifting me out of depression in a moment happened at a moment encounter surrounded by believers who were praying over me in that actual moment. And it was beautiful. And I've had like seasons of struggle since then, but that is the time I can point to and say that's the turning point when things started to.
Can you kind of take us to that moment?
Yeah, will you take us to that encounter? The encounter is like a prayer meeting, prayer and worship meeting that we do at our church
where we get to practice our gifts. But anyway, will you kind of like set that moment?
Yeah, we came to encounter. My home group would come and sit together every time. And they knew my struggle. I mean, I'm not good at hiding my emotions. So heart on the sleeve, like if I'm struggling, people know. So part of it is vulnerability. Part of it is just inevitability. But but I had gone into that one and I was just so exhausted. I had just finally had my last day at my job, was devastated. I loved it, but I knew the Lord had asked me to give it up. And went into encounter and really just sat there during worship, begging the Lord for a break. Like, I just need a minute to not feel this level of weight on me. And my people prayed over me. And I'm not sure what moment it happened during encounter, but all I know is I walked in feeling that way. And when I left, we were talking about dinner plans. And I just realized like, oh, I actually want to go.
Wow.
And I, you know, don't feel like I just want to go home and hide in my bed. I'm like excited to be with my people. Wow. And I was like, well, that's weird. Maybe it's just tonight. And then the next day I woke up just like full of joy. I mean, it was crazy. And so that truly was a profound moment for me in my faith. And I just don't think it would have happened without the people who carried me to that point and prayed over me in that moment. And so, I mean, it would have. God is sovereign, but that's how he did it. That's who he used. And so I'm super thankful. And then, yeah, especially I will say as a single in the church, an adult single, friendships are like how I interact with the family of God and how I find my place in the family of God in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so, it's been pivotal for me in feeling a place of belonging, in experiencing the love of God, experiencing the friendship of Jesus through friendship with his people, right? And so, yeah, I think that's truly the message becomes I forgot what you said, the story. It's just his people. They carried me, like, sometimes physically, but carried me and have continued to be there and celebrate the wins. And I get to do the same for them. And so it's just this joy of being part of a family, especially as someone who doesn't have my own nuclear family as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that. Are there like daily or weekly kind of rhythms or habits that you've picked up on this journey that help kind of keep you grounded, knowing that that's there?
Yeah.
And you can, if not careful, that might.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I had said I've had seasons where it's reared its head again. And I was in counseling regularly for probably 4 or 5 years of just going every other week and just like checking in and really going through that whole journey with her. And there were seasons where she was like, hey, I'm seeing it again, like might want to let your people in on this. But I reached a place, you know, where I'm like, I don't think I need this level of care anymore, but I do need to stay connected with my people. And so for me, it really is connection to my people, connection to the Word of God. So if I find myself in a season of struggling, I'll really turn to the Psalms and try to find one that speaks to whatever emotion I'm experiencing at the time. Psalms 34 is a big one that I go to. Yeah. Even Psalm 27, I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Mm-hmm. I just will cling to that and almost say it as like a act of determination. Like, I will see this.
Yes. Yeah, of the Lord. Declaring. You know,
yeah. And so clinging to things like that. And then, I don't do well in isolation. So if I feel myself starting to isolate, that's when I'll intentionally let someone in on, hey, I'm struggling. And again, man, I don't want to keep harping on it and being a broken record, but the Lord truly has given me people who, even in their seasons of, I mean, they're drowning, and they'll still reach out and say, like, hey, how are you? Like, yeah. I've talked a lot. How are you this week? I want to make sure that I know how you're doing too.
I would love for you to talk a little bit about this experientially.
Yeah.
Like having conversations, whether it's singles in the church or even marrieds in the church. Like, I don't know if people just like the idea of friendship, but don't know how to cultivate it. I don't know if they're just lazy about it. They just want the benefits of sowing and sacrificing to build those relationships, or they don't know how, or, but I think so many, I mean, I was just with a group of guys just about 2 hours from here, and we were talking about this idea of brotherhood, and man, so many of them were like, okay, how do you do that? Like, I watch you, man. I see you with Josh and Trevor and your guys that, you know, been with you for decades, and your closeness, and like, how did that happen? So for people that are watching, and I know that this is like, God built us for this. And so I know the human heart's hungry for it, but speed, pace, how we do life in the West, big backyards, really small front yards, privacy fences, YouTube before asking a neighbor for help. How do you, I mean, that's a real thing.
No, it is.
Like
it
even is. When I was growing up, if my daddy needed help for something, there was a friend, a neighbor that would come help us. And now most guys just Google it, get on YouTube and figure it out. Which there's something cool about that, but it comes at an expense of, I know my neighbors, I know their names, I know who they are, they know me, they know who I am. Or even in the church world where, like, this community God's called us into, it's so easy to just surface level, how you doing, I'm fine, and never, I mean, spend a decade in a church and never develop the kind of relationships that God's called us to when we're talking about biblical friendship. So how would you encourage, like, how do you cultivate that?
It's work. And I do think there is a level of people feel like it should be easy. Friendship should be easy. And there is a level of chemistry and things like that where it can start easy. But inevitably, you're going to butt heads with people and you're going to have arguments and people are going to call you out on your stuff. And like the things that we need to get to that level of depth and to be sanctified by relationships is a little bit of friction. And that's uncomfortable. So I think people want it to be comfortable. There's this idea too of protecting my peace and, you know, this is going to cost too much. But love is costly and friendship is costly. And so I think the idea of it should just be easy if it's right, it doesn't really hold water. And so there's it's necessary to really dig in with people. And you can't be best friends with everybody. But to find those people who are going to stick with you. And I think, you know, sometimes you think it's one person and it winds up being somebody from left field, but really taking the time and letting it take time to build that vulnerability, that depth, not being quick to offense. I think that's really hard too. And I think you have to evaluate if it's hard for you to make friends or if it feels like you just don't have a lot of close friends or you have friends and they change every couple of years. I think there's something to examine of, it may just be seasons and it may just be, you know, the natural ebb and flow of, proximity, things like that. Or it may be something where you're not digging very deep or you're not letting people get deep with you. And I've definitely done that. It's really easy to just go where it's fun and once things get hard to dip and run. But we'll never have the level of depth or intimacy that really is life to us if we don't dig in.
I had a friend say just recently, you know, it's not a matter of if, but when you're going to have conflict in your friendship or relationship. And that was some advice she got from her mom. And I was like, your mom's brilliant because it's true. And then I think even the conflict shows where you stand with one another. It's like, are you willing to hear me out? Are you willing to also repair any kind of rupture? And then there's the vulnerable act of trusting them again, you know, building back the trust, or maybe the trust never really is lost. But there's like that, oh, okay, this is new, you know, but just to, like you said, not being easily offended and being gracious, but there being some reciprocity in that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a huge piece. If you are always the one bringing something or, you know, being the gracious one or doing all the work to make the friendship work, it's not going to last. At least not in a way that it fuels both of you, but that's very true.
Mm-hmm. I think experientially, it's that moment of friction that leads to the kind of vulnerability that you can really start building upon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in that moment of testing where there is offense, that you have the opportunity to just shove that and create some distance or move towards the person and go, hey, I need to, like, I just need to have a conversation with you about this.
Yeah.
Like, let me tell you the story I'm telling myself right now or when that happened, this, and then if there's reciprocity in that friction, oh my gosh, I didn't mean that. This is what I was going. And now what just happened is we just moved closer to each other. And now there's a new level of vulnerability and trust that if the person offended just buries it or brushes it off, well, the next time it happens again, this person's not even aware that there was offense. Yeah. And now it's building.
Right.
Yeah. And now the friendship strained in a way that it never needed to be strained if you could have just moved towards the person for repair at first blush.
Yeah.
And so my closest friends are guys that we've done that cycle in 20 years, a thousand times. Where, hey, that for me, because of kind of how I'm wired, that's how that hits me. And now I've got the opportunity to be like, well, this is how I am.
Or
to own that, ask for forgiveness, not my intent, which then does what? It moves us closer to one another.
Yeah.
So that when I'm struggling then, this is a trustworthy brother. Like I know he can hold it. He can hold it because we've already done this and he's held something to a lesser degree. So I'm confident that he can hold this.
Yeah.
And then he holds that. And now we're on the path to deep, intimate connection and friendship. And without that moment of friction that gives us the opportunity to be vulnerable and to build trust, then I think dudes are always sitting around talking about hunting, Cowboys football, and kids sports, when God has so much more for us than that. In regards to belonging and connection.
I think that's an excellent point too, because that's the other side of vulnerability of that. Hey, this hit me this way. And I was that person who would bury it for the longest time because I didn't want to cause problems and I wanted to be easygoing and I was a people pleaser and all these things. And then I'm walking around wounded, but I'm also not telling them that. And so, you know, these huge blowups happen that could have just been, hey, this hit me this way. Can we work through it? And I had friends where that was what destroyed, you know, the relationship. And then I had other friends where when I finally did, I got the, well, this is just how I am. Like, we're not. And so you do kind of figure out who your people are, who you're compatible with, things like that. And that is like, it's weird to use the word compatible, but when you're talking about friendship, there is a level of that that's necessary.
There's no question. There's no question.
For sure.
Yeah. I think without moving towards the friction, you're just setting yourself up for a resentment.
Absolutely.
It's going to surprise you. And honestly, it's not fair to the other person.
No.
Because a lot of times they have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, they're acting selfish.
Yeah.
They didn't know you read it that way.
Right.
And so by not loving them enough to just go, hey, like I need to say something about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw this, I mean, it was on Instagram, but I saw this video, this guy was talking about it. Like, when someone wounds you in relationship, but you don't tell them that, you're creating a roadmap on how to love you, but you're not giving them the map.
Yeah.
And so then you're asking them to just like figure it out without giving them any direction.
Yeah.
And so that's not really fair. I mean, we don't even know ourselves well enough to do that.
True.
So
how are we going to ask someone else to?
So true.
Yeah.
There's something about fresh air and trees and being outside that's really replenishing for me. And yet, I think I spend 90% of my time indoors in front of a screen, at my desk, above my garage, or up at the office at the Village Church. And so I was excited when Air Doctor, which is like this award-winning air purifier that really eliminates like 99.99% of all kind of allergens and viruses and smoke and mold and all that stuff that's in the air. They were actually voted best air purifier by Newsweek. 98% of Air Doctor customers agree that when they plug these things in, the home feels cleaner and healthier. And so Air Doctor Pro is sponsoring this episode of The Overcomers. And if you will go, you will get $300 off today. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee plus a 3-year warranty. I think that's like an $84, $85 value. And so you can go to airdoctorpro.com. That's AirDoctorPro.com. And use the promo code Overcomers for $300 off any of their Air Doctor air purifiers. And so got one plugged in here. Love what it's done to my office. It has changed kind of the feel of things in my office. And so airdoctorpro.com, use the promo code Overcomers. So you've got these new rhythms where if it starts to flare, you know, okay, I need to move towards my people. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to engage. So let me loop somebody in pretty quickly. As you kind of wrote this book and it's born of, I think the reason I love it, having known you, is it's born of this journey mm-hmm. of that's not just glitter and sunshine and rainbows. You're not writing this from just like you can have this. You're writing right. it from a place of pain mm-hmm. that you want for others, the good gift that God gave to you.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how the suffering you endured kind of created the heart? I mean, it's a weird thing to be like, I just went from, you know, depression, anxiety
right.
to let me write a book on
sure.
connection.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not the book I thought I was going to write. I was prepared to write a book on suffering and depression. And I was thinking about that, and it's like the Lord just kind of whispered, what if you thought about friendship instead? And so that's really how that direction changed. But then the more I wrote it, the more realizing, how deeply we all need it, how much I want to see people flourish and thrive in deep friendships, and the lack of resources we had, especially at the time. I feel like there's more now, but coming out of COVID, when everyone is super isolated and everything's online, all of our relationships are at our fingertips and also farther away from us than they've ever been. And mm-hmm. so really just all of those things kind of came together and, all right, how do I articulate this thing that truly I don't feel like I, you know, started out with a plan of this is how I'm going to develop these friendships. I just have learned through living life. And so it was a process of looking back and examining what I've done, what the Lord has done, but also pressing in and asking him, like, what do I still need to do? And what do other people still need to do to really develop these friendships and find a lot of healing there? So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how that process happened.
Was there something, you know, this is always fun for me when I'm writing. Was there something that as you were writing kind of surprised you or, mm-hmm. or shocked you to be like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's how I got here.
Yeah.
That's how that worked.
Yeah. There were several things. but I think one, the second or third chapter is about friendship with Jesus. And I grew up with, you know, the silly t-shirt slogans like Jesus is my homeboy and all this stuff. And I know you've like
on that before. He's a rip-off.
But it was just this idea of like, okay, it's not that, but he is my friend. I mean, Jesus is the friend of sinners.
Yep.
The friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him. So there's all these mm-hmm. verses about truly how the Lord is a friend to us. And so I started really sitting with that and asking him, you know, what does that mean? What does that look like? Because you're not there like physically to like pop over to Madewell with me and go, you know, that, like, but you, he is,
but he would.
Even more. Yeah.
But he would.
He's even more present. And so Madewell. This idea, and this is something actually that I started doing when I was in counseling was I would take these Sabbath days really intentionally and turn my phone off, do all these things. But I would just ask the Lord at the beginning of the day, like, hey, come with me. Like, wherever mm-hmm. I go, I would like try a new restaurant that I've been wanting to try and things that normally I wouldn't have enjoyed doing alone because I enjoy doing things with people. Yeah. But I just asked the Lord to come along with me. And that was such a sweet season. And I didn't even realize how that was forming me until I sat down to look back at it and was writing it. So that was a big one. And just seeing him, I think that helped me experience his love in a more like heart, soul level to look back and see, oh, like you are my friend. Like you are my father, you are my savior, but you're my friend also. So
I think it was Augustine is where I read this. He would write about withness. Mm-hmm. I just loved that word.
Yes.
Yeah.
This idea that like I'm not going to work for Jesus. I'm not going to live for Jesus. I'm actually living with him. Yeah. I'm actually working with him. Like that idea been such a significant marker in my life. Like and this has become like a prayer in transition throughout my day. Like I don't want to move from this prayer time. Mm-hmm. Now let me go get to work. I want to come with you. I want to go with you. And I honestly think this is what Jesus is saying mm-hmm. in the Great Commission. Like, lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. It's almost like, hey, I'm going to save. Do you want to come?
Yeah.
I'm going to seek and save the lost. I would love for you to come with me in this.
Yeah.
And I just think that's such a revolutionary idea for Christians to realize that he does want to be with you.
Right.
And all that he's calling you to do, he's going to do with you if you'll just stay with him.
Yeah.
And that's John 15, right?
Yeah.
Abide in me, remain in me. Don't leave.
Yeah.
Don't move away from me to accomplish something.
Yeah.
Let me go with you. And that's what you're describing is like some of my favorite times of the year is mm-hmm. like I get out to our river cabin by myself and that's my withness, mm-hmm. like a replenishment of that.
Yeah.
Okay. I've gone, here I am again, you know, coming back in exhausted because I'm doing stuff on my own strength. I'm forgetting that, like, even if it's something silly, you want to go do that with me. And I'm in the habit of connecting, mm-hmm. praising and asking and dwelling.
Yeah.
And then going off to do what's next.
Yeah.
And it just so slow to learn that.
Yeah.
Better now than I've been, but I mean, I guess that's how sanctification works, right? But yeah, that idea of withness, mm-hmm. I think huge for not only kind of the archetype of the friendships he's leading us into to experience in the physical.
Yeah.
But just how the relationship with God actually works.
Yeah.
To stay connected to remain in,
yeah.
that he'll go with. Even something like going to a restaurant doesn't always have to be super spiritual. It's like, hey, I want to go eat at this place. Do you want to come?
Yeah.
You know, I'd love for you to come with me, Jesus, or I'm going to go see this movie, or I'm going to the shooting range, or I'm going to train jiu-jitsu, or I'm going to, like, come with me. I want you with me in this. Like something, saying that to Jesus, mm-hmm. I think is a powerful prayer.
Yeah.
And his receptivity to that prayer experientially for me mm-hmm. has been really powerful.
Yeah.
Been really powerful. So I'm glad you shared that. I think that's super helpful. How has that idea of witness, that idea of friendship with Jesus, has that been a significant tool in the kind of ongoing spats with depression and anxiety?
Yeah, because the inner voice when you're struggling with depression, at least for me, it manifests itself in a lot of self-accusation. I mean, I'm sure too, it's the enemy. I mean, like just a lot of lies, and so when I remember, okay, Jesus is my friend. He's also speaking to me. How do I hear his voice? And to recognize that friends aren't the ones sitting there going like, man, you're terrible. Just snap out of it. Like,
kind of suck.
Yeah, yeah, literally. And so it helps me truly differentiate his voice from a lot of the noise. And then also just, it helps me receive that because if I think that I'm imagining that or I'm just trying to like fluff myself up, it's really easy, especially like growing up Baptist, I was pretty legalistic. So it's really easy to like tamp myself back down and be like, no, you're terrible. Like and to remember like, that's not how the Lord speaks to me. Yeah. And so if my friend was speaking to me that way, I probably would not stay friends with them.
Yeah.
But if they were speaking to me and telling me like, hey, I love you, I think you're wonderful, like all these things, I'm going to tend to believe them. Mm-hmm. And so it's helped me even just cut through the noise of depression, anxiety, and the lies that come with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So we always come to kind of this moment where I think there's probably two different kinds of people listening to this right now that I'd love for you to just kind of mm-hmm. encourage and speak into. The first would be those who, man, they have a real hunger for the kind of friendship you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they've been just really hard pressed to find it.
Yeah.
I would love, like, what would you say to someone they're listening to this, they're in their car, they feel lonely. Maybe they go to church every week. Maybe they've got kind of real surface level relationships, but they find their heart longing for deeper connection and belonging. How would you maybe encourage them, speak mm-hmm. life into them? How can they take that angst that I think is probably Holy Spirit wrought mm-hmm. and move into cultivating these kinds of friendships?
Yeah. Man, I think the first thing, and I mean, you maybe already be doing this, but to just pray and genuinely ask him and beg for those friendships. And then keep your eyes open. I mean, they may come from places you're not expecting, your neighbor who you might need to ask for help instead of Googling yeah. how to do something or getting involved in your church or your community in some way. So where are the places where you're already interacting with people and pay attention to those that it feels like there's that spark of chemistry and then just like, foster that. Invite them to go to dinner. Invite them to go to the movie. I don't know. Just, I think it's really hard to initiate, especially when you are feeling lonely, because yeah. it feels like you already feel like people don't want to be around me or people aren't choosing me. And so then it's like kind of
risky.
Yeah, it's risky mm-hmm. Because you may ask and they say no. Mm-hmm. But A, to not lose heart and just keep putting yourself out there, which is hard. But yeah, I think. Just create the opportunities and pay attention to who shows up.
Yeah.
So good.
I love that.
Yeah.
And then the second person, and this happens anytime we talk about depression and anxiety, in this moment that we're in,
yeah.
though it seems like things are trending differently, mm-hmm. but for the last 5 years, I mean, mm-hmm. This is the pandemic.
Yeah.
Depression, anxiety, isolation, yeah. despair, like, somebody's listening to this right now because the Spirit just put it, like I said, put it on their feed
yeah. mm-hmm.
or a well-meaning friend or loved one or parent
mm-hmm.
said, hey, give this a listen whenever yeah. you get a chance
yeah. Yeah.
because they're hoping to see their loved one or friend or family member pulled out of depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
So for somebody listening to this, watching this, they're in it right now, man. They haven't left the bed maybe
yeah.
in a day or two, or maybe they can't remember the last time they felt like doing anything mm-hmm. other than just yeah. isolating, sleeping, shutting everything down. What would you say to them
yeah.
to kind of, by the grace of God, provoke them to consider moving towards mm-hmm. rather than surrendering to?
Yeah. Man, first of all, I'm sorry that you're experiencing that. I've been there and it's hard. And so my encouragement to you would be to just keep crying out to the Lord. And if it's a day where you can't get out of bed, find a worship song that you like and just put it on repeat. Whatever you can do to keep the truth in front of you, even
That's
if
good.
You feel like it's in front of you and you're not connecting with it and it doesn't feel like it's doing anything, it is like infiltrating your spirit in ways you don't even know. And so, yeah, just keep putting truth in front of you however you can, whether that's through music or, you know, putting a note card above your bed so that's the first thing when you see in the morning, just something so that you are constantly faced with what is most true. And if you can, turn off as much noise as possible. I think part of this being a pandemic is everything is on fire and everyone is telling you everything's on fire and you have to care about everything being on fire. And we're just not made for that.
No.
And so I think there's a time to look at what's happening in the terrors of the world and bring those to the Lord. But I think especially if you find yourself in that place, shut all that down and just get with the Lord and get yeah. with any people that you, even if it's one person that you think is safe for you, but find that person, and let them know you're struggling and let them help.
It's good.
I love that.
It's really good.
Both of those are good about it. I love the idea of friendship and cultivating deep friendships. I think if I think about longevity in ministry, if I think about surviving and coming out the other side of whether it be brain cancer or personal failures or difficult seasons with kids or spouse, or like the crew that I've invested in has been this grace of God to hold me to, remind me of the gospel, and to be that group that God has used most frequently to pull me back to himself. But those relationships have been cultivated. And I think one of the things that can happen if you're not careful is you're waiting for someone to cultivate you. And the way I would encourage you is, what would it look like for you to own it in a way that you're going to be the one that invites a group over to your place on a random night to have dinner and to talk about like things that I would describe as below the line, like not necessarily the surface level, you know, hunting, fishing, sports, kids, but to just get a group together and spend an evening over dinner talking about each other's testimonies or significant things that Jesus did in your life, ways that he's healed you, things that he's brought you through. I think you'll be amazed at how God begins to weave your heart with other believers when you hear about God's grace in their lives. And then you're able to be like, oh my gosh, me too. And now you've got these things in common that aren't like hobbies and personality types, but it's this, I have this thing in common with you that God's delivered us and moved in and through us in ways that really kind of connect us in a significant and spiritual way. And so I wanted to encourage you that way. And on the depression and anxiety front, I'm so with Brooke. I'm so sorry that you're in the dark in this season, and want to just ask you to keep contending, and to remind you that you have quite a few biblical friends that have been exactly where you are. I think about King David. I certainly think about Elijah. That's just like, I want to die. I want to die. And the Lord came to Elijah and was like, you need to eat something and you need to sleep. Like, get something to eat and go to bed. And then when you wake up, I want to remind you of some things. And so I want to encourage you to take good care of yourself, to just maybe one little step, like get up and go for a walk, get outside. And then here's what I love about God. God is not too small as to handle your honest prayers. And so confession isn't always, here's the bad things I've done. Confession is just telling God the truth. And so what if you feel abandoned, if you feel all alone, if you feel forgotten, what would it look like for you now, like to turn this thing off and then to have a real honest conversation with God that looks like some of the Psalms, that looks like Jeremiah's prayer to God, that looks like Moses's conversation with God, that looks like Elijah's accusation against God, and just say, I want to believe you're good and you're faithful and you're kind, and my heart right now can't see it. Will you come and minister to me? Will you give me a breakthrough so that I can praise your name like I want to, but it just feels impossible for me right now? I think part of the way we overcome is by having these honest conversations with God and not shrinking back and baptizing them in Christianese, but really moving towards the Lord in honest confession. Brooke, we love you. What a delight to watch God's work in and through you. And what a great book to cultivate legitimate connection and friendships in Christ. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so the Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.